I want to start by reflecting a little bit on how life often works. And I want to go back to 2009, 15 years ago, right? Colleen and I had been married for about 6 months-ish. And I was in my last year of college, and I needed a job. It was time for me to get a job because I didn't have that many credits left, and we were running out of money. So 2009 wasn't a great time to be job hunting. Economy was pretty bad, and not a lot of hiring was going on. But I made, you know, I filled out my resume like you used to back in the old days and started sending it around different places and not getting any bites, nothing. Months went past. So part of the problem was there wasn't much hiring going on, and people were looking for people with experience. Months went past. I did a little work for COP, but we were really scraping along. And it became a big thing. Understandably, I'm very sympathetic with my past self. And it felt like if only I could get a job, you know, a decent job, then I would hardly have anything left to worry about. And so it was stressful and a major challenge. Not a crisis, but a major challenge. But finally, after a lot of stress and job hunting, I did get one eventually. It took a while. And, of course, ever since then, it's been smooth sailing, and there weren't any challenges after that. That's a joke. No, before long, there was something else to worry about. And maybe it wasn't quite as significant, but there were things like, well, we're renting a house, and we should probably be thinking about getting a house. Now, how do we make this budget work? And how do we save for a down payment on a house? You know, and it's not the same level of stress, and you know, maybe it's a good problem. We didn't worry about that back when I didn't have a job, right? So in some ways, it was a good problem to have. But the point I'm making is the way life works is you kind of go from one challenge to another. Move this up, sorry. And this can be a little depressing, you know, realizing that if I get through whatever I'm in right now, there's probably going to be something else before too long. This can be a little depressing. I don't think it has to be. It makes a difference how we look at these things. It makes a difference how we handle them. Some questions for us to think about are, what kind of person does well in a crisis? What kind of person is sustained by God during tough times and receives wisdom and strength for them? And related to that, what makes some people not just survive, but maybe come out at a better place? So what I'd like to do this morning is review James chapter 1, and which talks about trials and faith and growth, and review that for a minute, and then hold that up against someone that I think is a perfect example of this being lived out, which is Daniel, and look at some of his trials and his faith and his growth even. And then after we're done with that, I want to hold James 1 up against what I'll call the anti-Daniels, the people that were not like that, like Daniel. So let's turn to James chapter 1. We'll read these verses, talk about them for a bit. Then we'll look at Daniel. James chapter 1, verse 2. My brethren, count it all joy when you fall into various trials, knowing that the testing of your faith produces patience. But let patience have its perfect work, that you may be perfect and complete, lacking nothing. But if any of you lacks wisdom, let him ask of God, who gives to all liberally and without reproach, and it will be given to him. But let him ask in faith, with no doubting, for he who doubts is like a wave of the sea driven and tossed by the wind. For let not that man suppose that he will receive anything from the Lord. He is a double-minded man, unstable in all his ways. So James is saying, challenges can bring growth, so cheer up. I'm not sure if I'm ever going to rejoice about trials. I don't know if I'm going to ever get to that place, but I can see that God does often use them for good. And Michael referred to this last week in his message. So challenges can bring growth, but we do need God's help with them. And that's maybe part of what he's trying to teach us with these challenging times we go through. We need his wisdom, and I'm going to add, we also need his strength to get through these. James says, God is a generous giver, so ask him for wisdom, but do ask in faith. And then he introduces another kind of person, someone who should expect nothing from God. He's a double-minded man, a doubter. He's unstable. He's a wave. Now he's over here. Now he's over here. And you can't count on him. He's all over the place. You can't count on him. And this almost seems wrong to say, but a person like that can't count on God either, because he's a wave. He's going here and there. James says, don't expect God to respond to a double-minded man. What happens to a double-minded man in tough times? Does he grow? He doesn't. Okay, now let's think about Daniel and kind of hold this passage up against Daniel's experience. Daniel knew about trials and tough times. He knew about them. He was uprooted from his homeland at a young age in Babylon. Instantly, they were faced with this pressure to assimilate, this very organized program to assimilate them into Babylonian culture and de-Jewify them, got new names. Then there was the crisis with the dream. And Nebuchadnezzar pretty much was a crisis all in himself. But he has this dream, and he demands that it is that they tell him what the dream was. And Nebuchadnezzar was right about two things here. One of them was the dream was important. He needed to know what it meant. And the other thing was that most of his wise men, most of what they had to say was baloney, and they couldn't be relied on. So he got two important facts right. That was kind of a sidebar. Then, after that crisis, there's another dream Nebuchadnezzar has where Daniel has to tell the king, you know, basically, if you don't mend your ways, you're going to go crazy. That sounds like a crisis. Then there's that whole event did happen. Then there's the handwriting on the wall experience. Then there's the lion's den, of course. And you take all of these and hold them up against James 1. And one question you could ask is, well, did these trials, what did they do to Daniel? Did they tear him apart, break him down, wreck him? They didn't. Did God come to Daniel's aid? Yes, he did. He gave him what he needed. And did Daniel grow through these experiences? Yes, he did. Now, I want to read a hymn of praise that Daniel gives here in chapter 2 of Daniel. If you turn there, I'd like you to look at this. It's Daniel chapter 2, just verses 20 through 23. And this is his hymn of praise that is... this is after God has given him told him what the dream was and what the dream meant. He needed both parts of that. And God answered their prayer. And there's this hymn of praise. And I want you to notice in these verses, this is Daniel 2, verses 20 through 23. Before I read these verses, I want you to look at, skim through them, and see things that are talked about here relate to Daniel's personal experience. He talks about kings being lifted up and put down. He's seen that happen, you know, Jerusalem fallen, king replaced, so on. Times and seasons changing. He's seen that happen. Mysteries revealed. He's experienced that. Wisdom and strength given. He's experienced that. And prayers answered. These are all things he's talking about. based on his personal experience with God. So this, the point I'm trying to make here before we read this hymn of praise is that it is not academic. It's not, it's experience based. It's not just Daniel read this in a book somewhere and wrote this wonderful poem. It's based on Daniel's experience. It's the difference between reading about a solar eclipse and actually seeing a total solar eclipse and the stars come out and there's a ring of fire in the sky. Or hearing someone talk about the blue angels and actually seeing one fly over the parking lot and set off car alarms. This is a real experience. Daniel has experienced God's wisdom and power in his own life. And I envy this experience of Daniel's. But he had to go through some tough times and make some tough choices to get here. Okay, so let's read this, verses 20 through 23. Blessed be the name of God forever and ever, for wisdom and might are his. And he changes the times and the seasons. He removes kings and raises up kings. He gives wisdom to the wise and knowledge to those who have understanding. He reveals deep and secret things. He knows what is in the darkness, and light dwells with him. I thank you and praise you, O God of my fathers. You have given me wisdom and might, and have now made known to me what we asked of you, for you have made known to us the king's demand. So to me, when I look at the life of Daniel, that is someone who I think is the perfect model of James chapter 1 applied. And he's receiving wisdom and strength from God, and he is at a better place than he was before. There's not to say that Daniel never struggled with doubt or fear or worry or anxiety. I don't want to just sugarcoat this and make Daniel into somebody who wasn't even human. But he did stay faithful, and he learned to rely on God. And this is another sidebar, but I just find it interesting to think about. Here Daniel and his friends are in this program set up by Nebuchadnezzar to assimilate them, to de-Jewify them, basically. And the end at the end of the story, you know, Nebuchadnezzar is closer to where Daniel was than the other way around. He shook this man, or God did, through Daniel. And Nebuchadnezzar is starting to see he is what Daniel believes. There is something to this. Okay, so now we're going to talk about the other side of James 1, the people who are not like Daniel. How would have a double-minded man have done in Babylon? What about the king's food and the king's wine? Would have he refused to eat the king's food and the king's wine? I mean, wine in itself, I don't know what the food was. Maybe some of it was obviously unclean, but the wine wouldn't have been necessarily. Would have a double-minded man say, I'm not even going there? Maybe he would have avoided the most obviously unclean food, but I believe he would have cut corners that Daniel did not cut. What about the crisis of the dream? How would have a double-minded man handled that? Would have he told the king, like Daniel did, wait until I go and get an interpretation for you? Or would have he been in the market for a fast camel to get him out of Babylon? It's probably what I would have done. Would a double-minded man have even asked God to tell him what the dream was? I mean, what are the chances God's going to actually tell you what the king dreamed? Would have he prayed with his friends like Daniel did? Daniel met with his friends. They prayed together about this. Would God have answered his prayer if he had been double-minded about it? And then what about the lion's den? Would a double-minded man have kept praying with the window open toward Jerusalem. Maybe a double-minded man would have never even become that much of a threat to the enemy in the first place. There's a few people from the Bible that I think of when I think of double-minded people. And I don't know, I don't have the last word, obviously, on these people. I don't know if I'm being 100% fair with them, but I'll go through these. One of them that I think of is Saul. And how he came to Samuel and said, well, after he offered that sacrifice he wasn't supposed to have, and he said, when I saw the people scattered from me and that you did not come within the days appointed, I felt compelled. I just had to. I mean, the people were fleeing. There goes my army. And we were losing the chance to strike while the iron was hot. Makes sense. So I just, I had to do that. Daniel wouldn't have done that. Or the other time, I've performed the commandment of the Lord. Let's cheer. The people spared, the people spared the best of the sheep and the oxen to sacrifice to the Lord your God. But the rest we've utterly destroyed. Daniel would not have done that. And things went downhill from there for Saul. And he became more and more unstable and foolish. It's like James 1 operating in reverse for him. Another double-minded man I think of was Samson. He did seem to know what his source of strength was. And he seemed to protect it for a while. He did. Tried to guard it, but he finally caved in. He never had much self-restraint. He believed some of the right things, but he wasn't very faithful. His choices were double-minded. And for most of his life, he went from one trial to another, and I don't really see any growth. Was he used by God? Definitely. But what if he had been more like Daniel? What about Solomon, a man who started off with so much promise and so much wisdom given to him from God, seemed to have faith, but then starts making these alliances that don't look faith-based, doesn't exercise self-restraint, and instead of exercising faith, he becomes more and more unfaithful, and in my opinion, more and more unwise. It's almost like James chapter 1 operating backward again. This is how double-minded people are. It's not just that they have doubts, because we all have doubts, if we're honest, but to me, these doubts have gotten a foothold and turned into suspicions. Like, does God really know what he's doing? And can God really be trusted? And they also produce compromises. Is it really worth doing this completely God's way? My modified version of God's way is more reliable, safer, gets results faster. So I'm going to do this version. It's close enough. They hedge their bets and cut corners and don't think it's actually going to make any difference. And that's too bad. Double-minded people don't do well in trials. They don't benefit from them. Not while they're double-minded. They become increasingly frustrated with God. And it's not God's fault. I had to think of this has happened to me a couple of times, where I've been in a Zoom meeting or Teams meeting or whatever, a video conference meeting, and I'll be saying, asking a question or responding to something or making a comment, and people just completely ignoring me and keep on talking, and it's amazing how frustrated I can get, and I guess they're not interested in what I have to say. And then I look down here, I'm on mute. This has happened to other people too. It's not just me. So that's frustrating. And that's sort of what I imagine can happen to people who don't have faith. And sure enough, God isn't responding. And this isn't working. And they're on mute. And they're double-minded. So where I'm trying to go with all of this is not that I'm suspicious that we're all double-minded here, but I want us to be inspired to be more like Daniel and realize that the truth of James 1, well, it's true. And we can have that positive experience. Okay, so let's spend a few minutes here talking about Daniel's faith and some qualities of his faith. As I was reviewing the story of Daniel, I picked out three things about Daniel's faith that I think are important qualities. The first thing about Daniel's faith was that he was his faith was patient. Faith requires us to be patient with God, and I don't mean that at all in an irreverent sort of way, but patient as in waiting for his timing. Not that we're being patient with God because he's doing something wrong, like we would be patient with our children. I mean patient in waiting for his timing and for him to do what is right. Daniel was uprooted from his homeland, yanked into exile, and I wonder, did he ever hope to go back to Jerusalem or Israel? Because he never did go back. And God sometimes puts us in situations that feel less than ideal. And he doesn't always take us out of them. Sometimes it takes a very long time for him to get us out of them. And sometimes he just doesn't take us out of them. And he wants us to be patient and experience the blessing that he has for us. You know, even when finances aren't great and no one's responding to our job applications. Daniel would have been familiar with God's message to the exiles through Jeremiah, and the message was, settle down, this is to the exiles, settle down, seek the peace of the city you're in, don't listen to the false prophets, you're going to be in exile for 70 years. And by the way, I have plans in the future for you. Daniel's faith was patient. It was also prayerful. The lion's den trap, of course, shows us that Daniel had a well-known reputation for entreating God, and that's why the trap worked. And if we go back to the crisis with the dream, you know, the Chaldean wise men were saying things like, you know, this is very difficult, and there's no other one who can tell it to the king except for the gods, whose dwelling is not with flesh. As though, you know, they're unreachable. And Daniel didn't see God as someone who was unreachable, couldn't be contacted, and wasn't there to help. And instead, he had he met with his friends. They prayed together. Daniel saw the power in prayer and group prayer. Esther did something similar, by the way. Another example of Daniel's persistence prayer was is recorded in Daniel chapter 10, where after Daniel had a vision that he was struggling. He didn't understand. He wanted the interpretation to it. And after 3 weeks of prayer and fasting, he finally got a response. And an angel came to him. And one of the things the angel said was, you know, I actually was going to respond right away, but I was delayed because of spiritual warfare. I don't understand all of this, of course. But it's just a reminder of how little of the picture we see, and we need to be prayerful and continue in prayer. Daniel his faith was characterized by prayer. He had a strong prayer life. He was patient, he was prayerful, and finally, he was faithful. That might sound a little funny as a characteristic of his faith. He was faithful. But because if faith isn't faithful, is it really faith? Probably not. But Daniel was faithful in small things and in big things. And starting with that decision not to defile himself with the king's food or wine. And I wonder how the rest of his life would have panned out if he had caved on that one and cut corners and been unfaithful. And by the end, he goes from that to being ready to go to the lion's den. Daniel was faithful in small things and in big things. So someone who has this kind of faith, patient, prayerful, faithful, is in the best kind of shape for facing life's challenges because his feet are planted firmly on the rock. So we started off with this question, what kind of person does well in a crisis? And the answer is someone who has a faith similar to Daniel's. Back to my job hunt in 2009. So that was a challenge. It wasn't really a crisis, but it was a challenge. And I was more anxious about it than I needed to be. And worried about things I didn't need to be worried about. But I did have a little faith. I wasn't a Daniel, but I wasn't a complete wave either. And I think I grew a little through that stretch. I still remember, this is why we were living in the apartment of the house that where Jeff's living now, in the basement apartment. And I still remember praying about the job situation, and I was back in the bedroom praying, and I heard a ding on my computer, ding, you know. In the old days, your computer made a noise when you've got mail. So an email had come in. I went and checked my inbox, and sure enough, it was an email from Liberty saying they'd like me to come in for an interview. I don't remember all the details about that account, but that's basically what happened around that time. And it was a good reminder, and I had just finished praying about it. It was a good reminder to me that God is actually paying attention and is aware of what's going on, even if, I would have done things, I would have liked to have had my answer a lot sooner than that and all that kind of thing. But God knew what was good, and his timing was right. And he showed himself that he can be trusted. Story of Daniel, it's a good reminder that James 1 is true. And as we turn to God, he'll be there to help us. He won't always answer our prayers exactly the way we want or with the speed we want. I doubt Daniel actually wanted to experience the lion's den. But we do need to be patient and prayerful and faithful with what we know is right. And as we walk with God, I think someday we'll have our own hymn of praise based on experience, our experience with God, which says, Lord, you've given me wisdom and strength for getting through all these difficulties, and blessed be the name of God forever and ever. Amen.